We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What is up, everybody? The Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 31. We are rolling along, and the Yankees just are rolling out of Atlanta. Thank goodness for Atlanta, because the Yankees needed that. Scott, what is up?
Yeah, you know, thankfully they have just a completely inept pitching staff, and we saw their ace on Sunday, and he didn't really look too much like one. Good timing, very good timing for this team. And good timing for us too, because I think at the beginning of the week we were ready for just another episode of just depression and nitpicking and all these things. So at least we're kind of coming into this on a good note.
Yeah, so I definitely agree. It was much needed, and much needed for me, because I was sick of watching all that bull crap the Yankees were putting out earlier this week. But how was your weekend?
I had a good weekend. It was the first weekend of football for me, because I had two fantasy football drafts, two of my big ones. I'm in way too many leagues. I'm in like three paid leagues, four actually, because Bronx Pinstripes, we have a league now as well that we started last year. So four leagues, which is entirely too much and takes up way too much time. But I absolutely love it and I'm obsessed with it. So yeah, it was kind of the first week of football for me, because we got to pick our teams for two of my leagues.
And how did it go?
I think it went pretty well. You know, on Saturday, I get the boys together at my house and we do a live draft, which is always fun. And we do a little bit of a unique spin on the fantasy football draft, kind of a throwback, but we do no technology during the draft itself. Like, the only technology we have is like a Google Doc where that I put up on my TV, and we, you know, update for the draft results. But everybody else, you have to come in with either pen and paper, notebook, no computers, no laptops, no phones, can't Google anything, no alerts, like that's it.
Well, that makes sense, because there was probably no technology when you started playing fantasy football, right?
There was zero technology when we started. Yeah. Thank you. There was none. But yeah, when fantasy football first was started, it was pen and paper, baby. But it's just kind of fun, because you have to do your research and it's a little bit more challenging, obviously. So so what we do, though, which is like I think the most fun part of it, is that every year I get a bottle of bourbon or a bottle of something. Like this year we had a bottle of rum. It was a decent bottle of rum and a bottle of tequila. So we had options. So, but we put that out on my coffee table, and that's like the penalty box. So if you pick someone that's already been picked, if you pick someone that's injured, whether you know it or not, it's just that's a penalty. If your time elapses. If your time elapses and then someone picks in front of you, they hopscotch you, like the Vikings, like it happened with the Vikings, you have to take a shot. And so it gets definitely interesting going into the later rounds when people aren't paying attention as much and they start picking people that were already taken. So yeah, the bottle was empty by the end of the night.
Yeah, I was going to say rounds like 9 through whatever, the end of the draft must be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and you know, of course, we're at my house, and I have my puppy like running around like a crazy dog. And I think in the 8th round, after I've taken 3 shots because I wasn't scratching people off my list every single time because I'm paying attention to the dog, I put her up in her crate so that I could pay attention. But yeah, she got me. She was worth at least 3 shots for me.
Yeah, I had my draft last weekend. I think we talked about that, and it's one of those. I know we drafted too early because all these guys are getting injured. Jordy Nelson injured, Randall Cobb, there was an injury scare. So
right.
It's one of those things where I'm just praying my team does not get injured, because I'm actually excited about my team this year. I think I'm going to be pretty good, and it'll be pretty disappointing if Adrian Peterson, who was my number one pick, goes down again.
Yeah, and I think this year – so we drafted this weekend, which was a little earlier than we usually do, because we usually go right before the season. But you know, now that nobody ever plays in the fourth preseason game, it's just practice. So unless something crazy happens in practice, hopefully injuries can be avoided. But you know, you're seeing a lot more injuries now, because I think the new CBA and with the players, how they bargain down less practice time. I mean, this is a big debate, I think, amongst the NFL and watching football, but you're seeing a lot more guys go down. And to me, it's because they're not getting as many reps and they're not on the field as much. So you're seeing more injuries, I think, and more non-contact injuries too.
Well, those are the bad ones.
Those are the bad ones.
Yeah, when a guy goes down, like Jordy went down, just no one within 10 feet of him. You're like, oh, that's it. ACL done for the season. You just
it looks like they get like sniped coming in just out in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
But like you said, I'm hopeful. I think I have a good team. I like I'm more of a potential guy. Like you didn't know that, but I'm a very big potential guy, and I like drafting young players as well. And I pay more attention to systems, and opportunities than I do like what they've done in the past. I mean, obviously I take all that into consideration, but I think the systems can really turn out big players.
So you stay away from the Jets system, right?
Yeah, I actually don't have anybody in the Jets. I have the Jets defense because I do believe in that. But not many offensive players. I think I did take Brandon Marshall just because he was a huge value at one point. But like guys like Latavius Murray, I'm excited about Brandon Cooks, so I think he's gonna have a monster season.
On Cooks.
Yeah, so I think they gotta throw the ball to somebody, right? And it's one of the highest passing offenses in the league. And I think Breeze was not very healthy last year, so I think we're going to see a nice little tick up from them.
Yeah, Sean Payton is one of those guys. He just runs an offense that you know is going to put up points. So always safe to pick someone on their team for fantasy. So I was in Atlantic City this weekend. Have you ever been to AC?
I have. I was there for a bachelor party about 10 years ago.
Funny.
It was ugly.
Funny you say that, because I saw probably 50 bachelor and bachelorette parties in just 2 days. Everybody was there for that exact reason.
Yep.
Girls walking around with matching shirts and matching, the girl was wearing the veil and everything. Right. One group of girls was wearing tank tops that said, he gave her a reason to go Parisian. just the worst kind of people down there. But it was a fun weekend. Definitely enjoyed it.
I mean, it's debauchery is what it is that weekend. Usually when you go there, you're going there for not good purposes most of the time. And, it's either gambling or just, you're going to completely binge, and probably both. So, and definitely when you're on those trips, a lot of times you find some, a little bit of trouble.
Yeah. So I'd been to Vegas a few times. I love Vegas. It's one of those things where you do it once a year and that's enough. You don't need to go back for another 12 months.
Right.
I wasn't quite sure what I was going to get out of Atlantic City. Everyone had said, it's just a trashy Vegas. You got the Jersey Shore sort of atmosphere with, the stereotypical Guidos and all that stuff. And sure, there was that, but that's always a fun environment, I think, anyway. But the one thing that I really thought that was unique, obviously, is the beach. So that was probably my favorite part, just being able to walk out of your hotel hungover and just go plop your ass on the beach and just go in the ocean. Something Vegas doesn't have to offer.
No, that's true. And they have the pools, I guess, but not the ocean. The ocean is something totally different. It definitely gets rid of a hangover when you hit the waves and all that. Yeah, at least helps you.
Give me the ocean over a pool any day.
Yeah, no doubt. No, but it's fun. I haven't been to Atlantic City in a long time, and you say Vegas once every 12 months. I'm like, dude, give me 3 years, 3 to 5 years. And I don't know about you, but I think the most I can spend in Las Vegas, at least when I was in my 20s and like early 30s, the most I could spend, I was like 3 days, was like maxed out. I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Very true.
I'm depressed. I need to leave. Like, I don't feel right. I don't know if I went back now, I think I would be able to like take in a little bit more,
you wouldn't. You'd be able to take in less.
Probably, yeah. I probably just revert back to as soon as I get there.
But I spent 8 straight days in Vegas once.
Oh, God, I could never do that. I could never do that. I don't know. How do you feel about yourself on like day 4?
It wasn't terrible. It wasn't just for vacation. I was there for work, but I extended my trip for an extra 3 days, and I totally underestimated how crappy you feel, 72 hours into being in Vegas.
This year, wasn't it? This was the Derby and all that.
This was three years ago. I spent 5 days there this year.
Okay.
I'm definitely with you. 3 days is enough. First night, you're there. Awesome. Having a great time. Second night, still having a good time. You're like, I could do this for the whole week. Third night, you're like, get me the hell out of here. I'm done with this. Fourth night, you're like, I'm not even going out. I'm just sitting in my hotel room. I don't need this shit. Yeah. Fifth night, you maybe have a little bit of a rebound, but you're just happy, I think, that the light is at the end of the tunnel. So, Vegas is one of those places that, it's weird. You walk into an alternate reality when you land there.
And so I haven't been to Atlantic City in a while. How's the actual? I mean, was it like bustling? Were there a lot of people there? Because I've heard that it's definitely because of all the other casinos that are popping up in Connecticut and Pennsylvania and Delaware, that there's not that many people going there. Nothing like it used to be. And well, Trump is closing his hotel down, right? There's a bunch of places closing down.
He sold his. His still exists, but he sold his. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it was like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but there was a few big hotels that were just, you know, empty. They were closed. It's kind of depressing to see. You know, you're walking down the boardwalk, and then there's just a stretch of boardwalk that's totally black because the hotel went out of business.
That's strange. It's like an eerie feeling.
I mean, there was a lot of people there, but it was you know, one of the last weekends of the summer, so I think it's always going to be packed then. But I bet if you go down there in a few weeks, it'll be pretty empty.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the way for most beach towns, too. You know, after Labor Day, there's a huge spike difference. Or, you know, there's not very many people there. So, well, good. I'm glad you have fun. I'm glad you're alive and made it out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good. So we're recording this Monday morning. It's good. I think I didn't record it last night. I would not have been in a good place mentally.
No, I think that was a good decision on our part. I think we're a much better state right now. And by we, I'm talking about you.
Yeah. All right. So you ready to get into some Yankees talk here? I think, like we talked about at the very open, it's been an up and down week, which I think it's been like an up and down month in August for them.
Yeah, you know, it's strange. It's really crazy how this offense just completely disappears for series at a time, and how then all of a sudden they rebound and are just, you know, like the Bronx Bombers again. They're such a weird team this year. They really are, as far as the, you know, their stats and the way that they go into streak. So luckily we bounce back at the end of the week.
Well, I think one of the things we had talked about early in the season, a key for this team, and it's obvious, I say this and I almost feel stupid saying it, but it's health. It's health with these guys. The older veterans need to stay healthy in order for this team to make it to October and, you know, hopefully make it deep into October. And right now they're facing a lot of injuries. CC was placed on the 15-day DL. The good thing is he doesn't need surgery, but I think we're all in agreement that we're probably not going to get much out of CC the rest of the year.
Right. I mean, and if he comes back to pitch, you know, he made the point in telling people when reporters were asking that he'd help in any way he can, even if it means pitching out of the bullpen. So he said he's ready to help the team in any way he can. Obviously, he needs to be healthy to do that. But, you know, CC's a confident guy. He feels that when he is healthy, when he's ready to compete at a high level, that he expects to go out there and do well and to win. So, I mean, look, the guy's been a winner for his entire life. He's been a top echelon starter. You know, of course he has that mentality. That's the only thing he knows. He should absolutely have that mentality. So, you know, let's just hope he gets healthy. And then if he does come back, that he can contribute in a positive way.
I love it that he said he would go to the bullpen. I think a lot of us earlier in the season wanted him to go to the bullpen. We just thought it would never happen. I'm still under the mentality that I'll believe it when I see it.
Right.
But at least we know he's not going to, you know, throw a hissy fit if he does go to the pen.
Well, and the other thing that we're looking at is it's very obvious, like you said, you know, we've gotten some injuries now, and you know, while we're a game and a half out of the division, we still have, yesterday it was four or five up in the wild card, even above the, you know, above the second team. So there's a bit of a cushion for the wild card as well. And I think the Yankees at this point are, obviously we're going to be, you know, focusing on the division. We want to win the division first and foremost, no doubt about it. But the rosters are going to expand soon. You know, going to a six-man rotation is something that Girardi, you know, we've seen he likes to do. He likes to cushion Pineda. He likes to cushion Tanaka. So, you know, if he does come back, you know, there's a spot for him, you know, as far as closing the season as a sixth starter, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I think they're going to probably put CC back in the rotation. I really don't see them putting him in the bullpen.
I agree for
a couple reasons. I mean, they've got a ton of arms out there, especially with the rosters expanding, as you just said. And look at his stuff. His stuff does not translate to the bullpen. I mean, it's just, I can't see him coming out. When are they going to use him? The fifth inning? If a pitcher doesn't get through five innings, it's like, I don't see CC being used in that situation. So I think sixth starter is probably a likely place for him to land when he comes back.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. It's not to mention that he's never done it before. You know, it's not something that he's used to, and these guys are creatures of habit. So throwing him into a completely different role when his stuff isn't the greatest at, you know, at this point of his career, to me, you're playing with fire at that point.
Now, playoffs is a different story. If they make it to the divisional or, you know, past that in the playoffs, I don't think he'll start a game. So he probably will be available out of the bullpen in a situation like that.
If he's on the roster.
He'll be on the roster. More injury news, and this one is bigger than CC. It's Teixeira. His leg is sore. He basically can't walk or run on it. He injured it, as we all know, August 17th. He's appeared in two games since then. He's just not healthy, and that's a huge blow for them because I think it's pretty clear how much they miss not only him performing in the middle of the lineup, but A-Rod in the middle of the lineup.
And we're still calling this a bone bruise, a contusion, right?
Well, he's going to undergo more tests. I mean, that was what it was when they did the first round of tests. And now that he still is pretty injured, they are going to do more tests to see if there's anything else wrong.
Yeah. And, I've had some pretty deep like bone bruises, they call them, I guess, before in my legs. And, man, those things can definitely immobilize you and keep you out for a while and just linger and linger and linger. So, as much as I say I hope it's that, because that means there's nothing structural. It's just a matter of, like, you know, getting healthy and it actually healing to feel right. And to me, that just takes time. And I guess he did come back a little early, which is probably something that he wanted to do, right? He wanted to test it, make sure. But yeah, he can't run very well. And I think it's just taken a lot longer for it to heal than anybody expected.
Well, we know Teixeira has a little bit of glass bone syndrome. So I'm not surprised it's taken him a long time to heal.
Right, but at the same time, right? We need him healthy. We absolutely need him. We don't need him lingering. I mean, we saw what happened to Beltran last year with an injury that he came back from and said he was healthy. He was not healthy. That elbow was never right. And you're seeing what you can do as an older guy. You got to be completely healthy, 100% healthy. And you know, even if you're nicked up a little bit, I mean, at this point in the season, like I want you to get ready and just rest, especially with Bird there contributing and doing well and kind of holding down the fort. You know, I think he's got that buffer to really just get healthy so he's ready for, our late season push.
Well, we are pretty much late in the season. It's September 1st coming up.
Yeah.
But I think maybe if they want to put him on the 15-day DL and just tell him, you know, literally don't walk on it for the next 15 days. Make sure it gets healthy so we have you the last 2 weeks of the season.
Right.
I'm almost okay with that.
Yeah. And again, I think Bird really helps that. You know, he helps us say that a lot better because he has been good. I mean, he's been good in the field and at the plate. I mean, he came at the right time and is performing the right way.
There's also been rumors that the Yankees are exploring maybe putting A-Rod out in the field at first base in the next coming week because they want to get another right-handed bat. They're facing two lefties in Boston. And they don't have, I mean, Greg Bird's a lefty, and obviously they're not going to put A-Rod at third because I don't think he has the mobility for that. So they want to get his bat, as many right-handed bats in the lineup, but I think that would be a huge mistake. I mean, look at how tired A-Rod looks just from DHing. You're going to risk him out in the field at first base, which he's only played once in his career, and that was an ugly showing at first base when he did it back in April.
Yeah, he did not look comfortable at all playing first. And, it's not so much fielding the ball because I think he could field the ball if it's hit, you know, a couple feet to the left or right of him.
Can he bend down, though? I don't know.
It's the bending, it's the stretching, it's the turning the glove the right way for receiving a ball. Like that was the awkward, like his glove turning reminded me of like a kid trying to catch the first time. He just did not look comfortable over there at all. So I agree with you. I don't think that at this point in the season you want to do that. But I could think of a couple right-handed bats that we could use coming up with when the rosters expand. I think will help matters. Get some more right-handed bats into the lineup. So I don't think they're going to mess around with that.
Is one of those bats you're talking about named Ref Snyder?
One of those bats is Ref Snyder, absolutely. They have been talking about the September call-ups. A lot of the beat guys have been asking Girardi and Cashman about this, obviously because it's coming up. We want to know who's going to be up and who's not going to be. So Ref Snyder was definitely the hot name that was thrown around. And, Cashman pretty much said that, yeah, Ref Snyder is going to be up. But the other guy that everybody's looking to see is Aaron Judge. And, throughout, they've been saying consistently that Judge is not going to be up. He's not going to be one of the call-ups. They do believe he needs more seasoning. which I agree with. I mean, I think he does need more seasoning. He's been striking out a lot at AAA. I think he needs to get ready for next year and then really 2017, where I think he's going to be that's where I think the target full-time role is for him when Beltran's contract is up. But honestly, I don't know why it hurts having him as a pinch hitter off the bat, a right-handed, power bat in September.
Yeah, but I think the fact that Beltran's actually playing pretty well,
right,
it pretty much ensures that he's going to be there barring injury for the rest of the season. They're not going to mess with that. And like you said, they want Judge to get a little bit more comfortable. He did make the jump this year to AAA. He lit it up at first, but maybe the AAA league is starting to figure him out a little bit. So he needs to make another adjustment. They might think, again, as you said, just bringing him up to the majors is too big of a step at this point.
Yes, he's in the future plans. I mean, there's no doubt about that. He's the starting right fielder in 2017, right? Are we agreement on that?
Absolutely.
Like that's the plan.
I wanted to just get back to Ref Snyder, though. When he comes up, we can't expect him to be plugged into second base every day because that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. We're fooling ourselves if we think that's going to happen at this point. I mean, Stephen Drew is the second baseman. That's been very clear. We have bitched and moaned and complained about Stephen Drew for a very long time, and I know we have a couple mailbags of guys who are we have the same sentiment. But he's been there, and to his credit, he's been putting the ball out of the ballpark. He's been doing nothing consistently. That is the wrong word to use.
No, he consistently hits a home run per week.
Yeah. Okay. And. But he's been hitting the ball a little better. Yesterday had a great game. Went 4-for-4 and finally cleared Mendoza. Drew is the second baseman, and Ref Snyder will plug in. And I think he's just, he's a guy who's going to be used against lefties. I think that's where he's going to be fitting in.
Definitely. You might see him pinch run late in games. You might see him pinch hit late in games because I think his bat is major league ready. He's not going to be the starting second baseman, and I know everybody is going to want him to be the starting second baseman. So just be prepared to be disappointed when he comes up.
But he'll be on the team, so we can't be that disappointed.
Right.
So at least he'll be there.
Yeah. All right, so I want to talk about something that happened last night. Jake Arrieta threw a no-hitter against the Dodgers. This was the sixth no-hitter this year, and it was the 11th in the last 2 years. And I'm just under the mentality with no hitters at this point. Like, who the hell cares anymore? It happens every week at this point. The Dodgers were no hit twice in the last 10 days. I'm just thoroughly unimpressed with no hitters at this point.
This just comes because you've been seeing it a lot more lately, and it's just not new or unique at this point.
Well,
you and I disagree a little bit on this. I know.
Yeah, we do. I'm just under the impression that the no-hitter now is like the 40 home run season in 1998. It's just not that impressive.
Right. Okay. I get it when you're looking back and you see that the amount of no-hitters in the last 2 years, and you could chalk that up and people will say, oh, that's unimpressive. It's happening all the time. But to me, when that is actually happening in the moment for that guy, I love it. I love the tension in the game. I turn the channel still every time to watch it. I love the crowd response. I love that there's still pressure in that moment on the pitcher, on the fielders, and on the hitters to end it. I still think it's a cool situation. It's a fun atmosphere, and I think it's a great baseball moment. I personally like it every single time it comes. Like, I get why people are kind of numb to it at this point because it's been happening a lot more often. But I don't know. I think it's one of those great baseball situations, and I personally will still turn the channel to watch it.
I did not change the channel last night. I know the game was on ESPN. It was a Sunday night game. I saw it happening on Twitter. I was watching the VMAs. Make fun of me for that if you want, but
I will.
Those are highly entertaining in a dumb way, but they're entertaining. And I was under the impressions like, I'll find out if Arrieta gets his no hitter through Twitter. I don't need to change the channel.
You could also look up Miley Cyrus's highlights and what she wore the next day too, if you wanted to.
Yeah, but I mean,
these are all things that you could see.
Then I couldn't live tweet it.
Jesus. But yeah, I mean, I get it. I get it. As far I don't get the VMA thing. I mean, that's that you're on an island with that one, but. But I definitely see how people are more numb to it. I mean, you're telling me that if it wasn't, what about if it was your team? If it was the Yankees coming up with a no-hitter, you wouldn't be rallied and like jazzed up for that?
Absolutely. Of course I would. I just don't give a crap if Jake Arrieta is throwing a no-hitter. But 10 years ago, if someone was throwing a no-hitter, I would change the Yankee game to go watch that game. That's how into it I was back then.
And this is something we also looked up before we started recording, right? We were looking up the amount of no-hitters that were in the 70s, 80s, 90s, like just kind of looking at the decades and seeing where we were at this point, because I think now we got spoiled this is an interesting conversation, but we got spoiled in the steroid era for the amount of power and runs that we saw, right? And how infrequent we saw no-hitters because the offense was just so, it was peaking at such an immense level that the pitchers had a hard time getting out of or getting into these situations where they're no-hitters. So it was exciting, right? It was exciting at that point because it didn't happen very often. So I think we got spoiled in the way that, you know, we saw it so infrequently. So it was such a, an infrequent thing with baseball that it was cool to see. So now that you're seeing a little bit more often, you're like, 10 years ago when the offense was ridiculous, when everybody was cheating, now because the pitching has caught up and probably exceeded the hitting, it's not as exciting to a lot of people anymore. But
Also know what it is. It's that back in the 90s and early 2000s, the only guys that threw no-hitters were the best pitchers in the league. You know, Randy Johnson threw no-hitters. Pedro threw no-hitters. We saw Cone and Wells, throw perfect games. Those were considered, the top echelon of pitchers. Now we got guys anywhere from Jake Arrieta to, Carlos Carrasco. I know he didn't get his no-hitter, but he came within one out. All these guys, Dallas Braden threw a perfect game. A couple years ago. It's like these guys are not good pitchers, and they're throwing no-hitters. And I think that is kind of where it loses it for me.
Right. I mean, you see guys like the other thing you see, though, is Verlander. I mean, Verlander seems to be flirting with he hasn't had the greatest year. He's actually been pitching well lately. But he seems to be flirting with a no-hitter quite often. I mean, I think he's lost two no-hitters in the ninth inning as well. But he just lost one with two outs last week or this week. So you do see the guys that have good stuff still out there. But I seem to recall, I think it was the late 80s, I don't remember exactly what year, Andy Hawkins of the New York Yankees throwing a no-hitter and losing the game. So there were still guys that were throwing no-hitters weren't the top names. I mean, I think if we look back into the 80s and the 70s, we'd see some of those guys that we didn't recognize.
I'm sure we would. I just think that we're seeing an overmarket correction from the steroid era on pitching. And on a overall level, I'm okay with it. I think I'm still interested in the game of baseball. I'm just not going to go freak out every time there's a new no-hitter thrown. All right, so let's start to break down some of these games over the last week. The Yankees, as we already said, are a game and a half in back of Toronto because Toronto just does not frickin' lose anymore. And I feel like every time we look up at the scoreboard, Toronto's up, 5-0 in the third inning again.
The bats have not quieted down. I'm still waiting for that to happen. I feel like it's got to happen at some point soon. Baseball always seems to correct itself. So hopefully it happens at the exact wrong time.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, like when the Yankees are playing them seven games in the last couple weeks of the season. That would be
perfect timing, yeah.
Yankees are 72-57. It's not like they're playing bad. They're playing okay. But as we just said, Toronto's just playing out of their minds. So Monday was the first game against Houston. They got a 1-0 win. And this was Eovaldi's best game of the season. And coming from me, you know that's true. 8 innings, 7 strikeouts, 3 walks, only 4 hits. He looked like the good Eovaldi that we see every now and again.
He had his great stuff. He was really pitching well. And you're looking at him, you're watching him pitch. And I know we'll talk about his last start, which wasn't that great, but you're just seeing a lot more confidence. I think you're looking at a different guy coming out there now. He expects to do well, and I think that's extremely important for the psyche of a starting pitcher. He's locating his breaking stuff. His breaking stuff is a lot better than it was early in the season, and that splitter is a game changer for him. When he has that splitter going and it's working well, it's a strikeout pitch. It's a pitch that misses bats, and that was the one component of his arsenal that he just didn't have. You know, people were not swinging and missing on his fastball, but the fact that he has a splitter that's working well, it's making his fastball that much more effective.
Houston's a pretty good lineup, and for Eovaldi to do that against the Houston lineup is impressive. I was very impressed with that start. They needed it. It saved the bullpen. So great job, Eovaldi, on that game. But then we see what he did Sunday against Atlanta, and it's like, why can't we get a little bit more of consistent performance out of Eovaldi? That's why he annoys me.
But that's what I don't understand. He's probably been the most consistent Yankee pitcher all year, consistently.
You look at his record, and yes, I understand.
I'm not even looking at his record. I'm looking at him going into the fifth inning and us in a game. That's just what I'm looking at.
But
fifth inning, we're in a game.
But for
every
him to go 5 1/3 innings and just keep us in the game, to me, that is not good.
But here's the thing. The Yankees are relying. Like, I get the fact that you want him to go deeper in the games, which he has been doing over the past month. I mean, you can't deny that. The man has been going deeper into games. Besides this last start, he's been going deeper into games. But, you know, one of the strengths of this team is the bullpen. The fact that we can, we can come in the 6th, 7th, and 8th and lock a team down and do that. Well, it's a strength of ours. It's something that, you know, I don't think the bullpen is overworked right now. I really don't. I think the bullpen's in good shape. And we've seen a lot of these guys go 5 innings, you know, with CeCe and Eovaldi and even Pineda with however many blow-up starts we've had and just random starters that we've had that, you know, even Severino, they're not letting him, go past the 6th inning, really. So we're seeing our bullpen really do well, and it's not they're I don't think they're tired. I don't think anybody's really at their limit. I think this late in the season, so you know I think it's kind of gone to plan, and I think he's really really progressed over the season, and that's what we wanted to see. Look at him from last year.
Yeah,
I mean it's night and day from his entire career up until this year. Larry Rothschild has made pitching coach of the year with Eovaldi, honestly. Like he saw the raw goods, and I think he's turning him into a legitimate bona fide starting pitcher and has progressed to the highest winning percentage in the American League at 14-2. Yeah, congratulations, Nathan.
I'm not saying he's a bad pitcher. I'm just saying he has the ability to pitch 7 innings a night, and consistently he's going 5 2/3 innings a night. That's another inning and a third that he should be giving this team. He has the ability to save the bullpen a little bit more. I understand if CeCe can't do it because he flat out can't do it. Nova hasn't been able to do it. So you need your bullpen for those games, not an Eovaldi game.
But there's the deal.
That's why he pisses me off.
So the other guys that should be bothering you as well, because Nova, I mean, absolutely should be getting past the fifth. Michael Pineda should absolutely be getting
Nova
past
is coming
the fifth.
Back from Tommy John surgery. I mean,
how long do we have to say that though? I mean,
it usually takes a full season for him to get for guys to get back to normal after Tommy John. Now, listen, Nova has been bad. I'm not giving Nova a pass by any means, but I'm gonna be more understanding if Nova can only go 5 innings than if Eovaldi can only go 5 innings.
If we look at Eovaldi's past and we look at the way he's pitched in the past, I mean, he's thrown a lot of pitches. That's we knew that coming in, right? He gives up a lot of hits. But I think he's trending in the right direction big time. I think this guy has missed a lot more bats lately. You're seeing the strikeouts up. You're still seeing the pitches up, the pitch count up. But I think that's because he's getting those swings and misses, right? There was an article that Roey actually had put on the site and talking to about the balls that were put in play from Eovaldi's bat and how much of a bad luck he's had as well. And even you're seeing, you know, a lot of these little dribblers or base hits and things like that. But look, I understand your frustration, kind of. I think at this point, I'm not really frustrated with that because the last game, and we're going to talk about the game he just pitched, but he did not have his great stuff. He was not locating. Like, it's going to happen. That's going to happen. But two of the three starts before that, he went to the 7th and 8th inning. You're seeing the extension. He is moving on. And in fact, I think John Flaherty, this is I wanted to take a screenshot of this and send it to you yesterday, and I just couldn't get my phone ready in time. But one of, you know how he does like the pros?
Yeah.
Right before, one of the three pros was innings eater. I loved it. I saw that and I was like, if Andrew saw this, he'd be flipping his lid right
He's
now.
He's not an innings eater. What the hell are they talking about?
I thought it was hysterical. But yeah, that was one of his pros of before the start.
All right. Well, so we're still on this Monday game. Evaldi just sparked something in the both of us where we just start to argue. But the Yankees couldn't hit Scott Feldman in this game on Monday, and they found themselves 0-0 going into the ninth inning. And thank God for Oliver Perez being inept, because he walked the bases loaded with no outs and basically handed the Yankees the game on a silver platter, and Beltran was able to get the sac fly to score Gardner. 1-0 win, great win. But it kind of went downhill in the series after that.
Yes, it did. And Evaldi didn't get a win, man. He was robbed of a win. What's up with that? Robbed of a win.
Yeah, it's that's market correction.
Can we get this man some run support, for God's sakes?
He gave 20 runs yesterday. one other thing I want to mention in this game: Chase Headley made just a terrible error in the eighth inning of that game. Evaldi was still on the mound going into the eighth inning. He gets a ground ball to Chase Headley, and Headley just airmails it past Bird, who was playing first base at the time. You know, 20th error on the season for Headley. I know Headley's not been the worst, you know, overall this year, but I'm so scared he's going to make a really bad error come late September into October.
Yeah, I like Trace Headley. I just think he's making too many errors. It's so weird. It's that over-the-top throw. I don't know how consistently he is throwing the ball. Anyway, I just don't like it. I don't like the way it looks. I don't like anything about it.
Scott, when a ground ball is hit to Chase Headley, how do you feel when you're watching it? Are you holding your breath? Because I'm scared shitless whenever a ground ball is hit to Headley, especially when runners are on base.
Yes, because the way he throws, it looks awkward. It just doesn't look right. It looks like it's going to be high every time because of where his slot is, where he releases the ball. So yes, but you know, it's so funny because the ones he boots are like the routine balls, or like the ones that are he throws away are like the routine ones, and then he makes the ridiculous plays. You know, he makes the play, you know, almost as good as anybody at third, you know, away from first base going like towards the line. He makes that play a lot, and it looks looks terrific. But yeah, no, it's the routine balls where he either boots it or he airmails them, and just that the way his throwing style to me is just not the greatest for a third baseman. So I mean, I see what you're saying, but I like him. To me, he's been a steady bat. He's just kind of like a steady Eddie over there, and he's had some big hits. He's had some big hits in big moments, and I think that we'll see that going forward. I think he's just one of those guys who's a good clubhouse guy too, and I just like him on the team.
20 errors, mid 250s, whatever he's batting average with 55 RBIs, which is I think he has, is not what they paid for.
Pablo Sandoval.
Okay,
look to see what the market dictated. The market dictated.
No, they could have gotten.
They got a good deal.
They could have gotten Chase Headley for less than the contract they gave him.
Yeah, fine. They probably could have gotten him a little bit less. You're right. Maybe a little bit less. But what they wanted to do was solidify a guy over there that they knew would produce at a relatively good level. I mean, I think he's an above average third baseman from as far as production. I think he's been good. You look around the league, and you're not going to find too many guys that are that much better. You know, guys like Josh Donaldson not included, but I think he's been above average. So.
His offense has been average. I know you said he's had some big hits, which, yes, he has. He's had some walk-off hits, and he's come up clutch in some moments for this team. But I think, maybe this season is an outlier with the 20 errors, but he should be making about 8 errors a season, not what he's on pace for, which is like 24.
Right, and I think it is. I think it's one of those seasons that we're going to, you know, when you look at his career, you're going to throw this one out, because I think that it's not what you normally get from him.
All right, so from Chase Headley making errors to the Yankees losing 15-1 on Tuesday to Houston, this was just one of the ugliest games of the season, and it started right from the first inning with a missed opportunity for Ellsbury in center field. So Nova got two quick outs and then just totally lost it. He walked a guy, and then there was a line drive to Ellsbury. Ellsbury kind of froze, was late getting a jump on the ball. He dove for it, couldn't quite get it. The run scores. It's a play that I think Ellsbury probably makes 7 or 8 times out of 10. He didn't make it. but the run scored. But I think Nova really needed to get out of that inning, and he just couldn't, and he ended up giving up 5 runs in that inning, sort of set the tone for the whole day.
Yeah, Nova couldn't get out of the inning. Ellsbury definitely, I think, misjudged that ball. I mean, like you said, he froze. He was in mud for a good split second before that ball. I mean, you can see the replay, the ball off the bat. He does not move until that ball's over second base. So he had a late jump on the ball, and it was absolutely a catchable ball. I mean, he does make that catch most times if he sees the ball off the bat well. He just didn't see the ball off the bat. It happens. And unfortunately, he actually injured his hip, too, when he did that little half dive. But Nova's got to get himself out of that inning and you know, come back from that and not get rattled. And he just didn't. And, you know, I don't want to waste too much time on this game because it was the worst game of the year, in my opinion. It was terrible to watch. And, Brendan Ryan made a bad play in the field, just like just one of those not even looking at the ball all the way through and just booted a ball. And there are a lot of things that we could talk about that were negative in this game. But to me, it's worst game of the year. Chalk it up to that. Move on.
Yeah, just a couple of things I want to mention more about this game that sort of made headlines. First of all, Brendan Ryan was the best pitcher on the team that day.
Yeah.
Capuano was DFA'd for the fourth time in the month, and they've since outrighted him back to Scranton.
No mas.
Please,
just stop.
It's just like, come on. Put him
He's
down.
He's not a major league pitcher. Stop.
Put him out of his misery at this point. And the whole spat with Carlos Gomez getting sort of heated after he made an out in a blowout game, and Girardi coming out there and telling him that's not how you play the game, sort of reprimanded him. I mean, come on. The Yankees were just pissed off they were losing big in that game and taking it out on Carlos Gomez, who admittedly is a hothead and an annoying player. But I think the Yankees just need to stay quiet in that situation and move on to the next day because they kind of came off looking foolish, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Gomez is one of those guys who he's an antagonizer. He makes people mad all the time with the way that he acts, the way that his antics are. He's always over-celebrating or overdoing something. But in this situation, what happened at that time, I think the Yankees were frustrated. I know the Yankees were frustrated because nothing was going right in that game. And, you know, honestly, like the incident that that they were calling him out on, like he was yelling after he hit the ball, but I think he was yelling at himself because he missed the ball, you know, where he wanted to hit it. So I don't even think it was directed at the Yankees in that particular thing. I just think the Yankees saw something, and McCann has a history with Gomez from his Atlanta days. So I think that McCann was the one barking at him, and then, you know, Gomez just kept looking over there and telling him to shut up. So I get it. Gomez is an annoying player. Like he gets under people's skin. But at that time, I think it was just pure frustration from the New York Yankees.
Yes, totally agree. And then on Wednesday, the Yankees had Big Mike returning. It was a Wednesday afternoon game. Pineda was returning from the DL, first time he was pitching since July 24th. And I didn't watch this game. I was listening because I was at work. But he just was not – he didn't have his good stuff. 4 1/3 innings, 5 runs. I don't know what we can expect from Pineda the rest of the season. It's a total mystery for me. If you tell me tomorrow, next game out, he's going to go out and pitch, you know, 7 shutout innings, I'd be like, okay. And if you tell me he's going to get roughed up in 3 innings, I'd be like, yep, okay, that makes sense as well. Just, I don't have a clue what he's going to be.
Yeah, he's definitely been much, much too much up and down. And, you know, this was a day game as well. I had things going on for the first half. I caught the second half of the game, so I was able to see the beautiful Ali Perez pitch against us. But, you know, as far as what Pineda, I agree with you in the fact that I don't know what we're getting from him. I mean, you see the 16K performance, and then you see him blow up in 3 innings and just completely mentally shut down. You know, he's been an injury issue. You know, is he healthy? Is he not healthy? I don't know what he is. But at this point, you know, when he's on, he's a great pitcher. He's one of the best. He's got some of the best stuff in the major leagues. I just don't know how often we can expect that stuff or when it's going to show or, you know, when he's going to rear his ugly head with some of the bad starts. So he's kind of an anomaly in our pitching staff right now.
First game back from the DL, you kind of give a guy a pass, but right. You know, we'll see what he is the next time out.
Yep.
So it's like the Yankees go from scoring 4 runs in 3 games versus Houston. They go down to Atlanta, and then they score 38 runs in 3 games. It's like a microcosm for this team. You know, we saw it earlier in the summer when they scored 90 runs in 9 games and then 8 runs in 7 games. So kind of experiencing that again. But it started with a 15-4 win Friday night in Atlanta. And the key to this game was the Yankees scored 9 runs in the first 2 innings. And how many times have we seen them score big early in games? And that's when this team is at their best, because their bullpen is so lethal that teams know if we fall behind early, you know, we've got guys, you know, Wilson, Shreve, Betances, Miller coming out for the last 4 innings. You know, we're screwed if we fall behind.
Yeah, and you see a different type of approach, I think, at the plate. I mean, these guys just seem very loose at that point, and they're playing with house money, and I think that's when they're at their best, when they're playing loose. I mean, we've seen that. When the clubhouse atmosphere is a fun, like, you know, almost a fraternity-like atmosphere, like a college team or whatever, these guys are at their best, and I think when you get up big like that too, I mean, there's obviously some good vibes going on. And hitting is contagious. You'll hear that a million times from guys who are playing baseball. When someone's down, you know, unfortunately it kind of spreads. But when someone's up, you know, that spreads as well. And I think these guys kind of feed off of each other and feed off of the atmosphere and the emotions within a game. Didi coming up with a big game. I mean, second half stats: 302 batting average, 3 home runs, 22 RBIs. And in this particular game, he had 4 hits and 6 RBIs. I mean, Didi's been better than I think we had expected, to tell you the truth, this point in the season.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's an understatement. He's been way better than we thought. Playing defense at a high level, hitting at a much better – you know, he's never going to be a 15 home run guy. But if he's a 280 hitter that can get on base a decent amount and cause some havoc at the bottom of the lineup, I think that's a huge home run trade for Cashman and the Yankees.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at this point right now, it's a good trade. I mean, he's really coming into his own, and you can just see the confidence. And, you know, he's hit skids too and then come back from them, and in the second half even, and has come back with, you know, with a game like this, which has been crazy. But yeah, he's been phenomenal. I mean, I love watching him play short. I think his range is, you know, some of the best in the league, and his arm is just, he's got a cannon. So, you know, I think we're seeing the makings of an everyday shortstop for years to come. You know, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but, you know, he's really been doing well.
Definitely. And Tanaka pitched this game. He scattered 5 hits and 3 runs over 7 innings. And you and I were talking before we started recording, you know, you look at that line for Tanaka and against that Braves lineup, which is pretty bad, and you say, that's not very good. But then you look and you realize that it was 9-0 pretty much before you could even blink an eye. So I think Tanaka pitches to how the game is, you know, what the game is dictating. And I think that's why we see a lot of solo home runs given up. Right. And we see a lot of games where, you know, he just doesn't want to – in this game, he didn't want to walk people and give up a big inning. So he was just going to go out and throw strikes. But in other games, when it's a tight, you know, 1-1 or nothing-nothing game, he'll bear down and pitch a little – you know, pitch better.
That's it. I mean, he's a smart dude. He pitches to the situation. Like you said, the solo shots. I mean, he's more aggressive with guys who, when there's nobody on base, when there's you know, a big lead, you know, he'll be more aggressive in the strike zone and try to make his pitch. And if the hitter, you know, get something off of him, then, you know, tip of the cap. But yeah, he pitches his game, and I think the situation really does dictate how he kind of goes at people. But I have confidence in the way that he does that, because, you know, I think he's efficient in that manner too, where he's just, you know, he's thinking about the situation, he's thinking about what he needs to do for the team to either lengthen, you know, to get deep in a game, to, you know, just to bear down and, you know, get a strikeout. Like, I feel like he's got all those pitches in his bag where he can, you know, he can make the best of every situation. So, yeah, I'm not worried about the numbers, the solo shots. I'm not worried about it at all. I think he did his job and did well.
Tanaka's if we get to the situation, he's either the game one starter in the playoffs or the one game playoff starter. I really don't think there's much of a question about it. And I think what we'll get out of Tanaka in that situation is, you know, come the sixth and seventh inning, no matter what, the Yankees are going to be in the game. It's going to be either they'll be leading or they'll be just slightly behind. He's not going to go out there and just get absolutely tattooed in a big game.
No, I agree with that. I think his moxie and the way he goes about a game kind of prevents that. He's a big game pitcher. I truly believe that. And so, yeah, I have the utmost confidence in him right now. But we've talked about this. Utmost confidence in him as far as like a top of the line starter. Like, does he have the most like dominant stuff all the time? Probably not. But I do trust him. I don't know. I think that's the best word, I guess. I trust him to pitch well and to come up big in a big game situation.
Let me ask you a question. Would you ever name your kid Sugar Ray?
I don't think I could get away with naming my kid Sugar Ray.
The reason I bring this up is because the Braves have this kid who's out of their pen named Sugar Ray Merriman. And I think it's an awesome name. Anytime you name your kid Sugar Ray, you know he's destined for greatness. And pretty much you better hope he's an athlete, because I don't think you can get away with that, you know, selling insurance or anything.
Although I would not. No, that's – I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that, because if my insurance agent's name was Sugar Ray, that'd be awesome.
Nope.
Or my real estate agent. Where are you going? I'm going to go see Sugar Ray. He's going to sell my house. Like, he's a closer. He's got a nasty left hook. I like that.
I'm not buying anything from someone named Sugar Ray.
Yeah, but you want him on your side.
Maybe.
I want Sugar Ray to sell my house.
Depends the situation.
Yeah.
All right. So Saturday, Yankees got a 3-1 win. Severino got a second win of his career. 6 innings, no runs, 4 hits, 5 Ks. The only thing I think you can nitpick is the 3 walks. And he's walking per 9 in the bigs about 1 more walk per 9 than he did in the minors, which is kind of understandable. I mean, the hitters are better. They got a better eye. They work the counts more. But I think Severino overall has been fantastic. I think he's consistently going 6 innings, which is pretty much as far as they're going to push him at this point. And he's always, you know, striking guys out. He's always keeping his hits and runs down. So I think as he progresses, his command will get a little better, and that walk ratio per 9 will come down, and he'll be even better.
Yeah, I think he's been tremendous up here. He has his second win. He easily could have had at least one more. So he's everything we've expected him to do. I mean, if you look at a guy that we could have brought over at the trade deadline, if you look at compare a top of the line starter and Severino's numbers to, you know, what we could have gotten and what we would have given up, I think anybody would take what we're getting, just because of the youth and just the overall pop this kid has in his arm. I think he's been a tremendous, you know, this is like our pickup, right? This is like a free agent pickup or a trade deadline guy that we were waiting in the wings to help this team in the second half, and I think he's been better. I think he's been better, honestly, than advertised. I think he's really held himself well in the major leagues, and I agree with you. I think his command's going to get better, and I think he's just going to get more comfortable and more into a groove into the major leagues. And I think he's going to be, good for a long time for this team. And I think he's really help us down the stretch.
You're just talking about, you know, the guys they could have gotten back, like Hamels, Cueto, or Price. The only one out of those big three who has pitched well is Price.
Cueto. Well, Hamels has had some good outings too. Hamels has been pretty good. Cueto has not pitched to his liking, but he was one of the guys. But were we ever in those guys, that situation for those guys?
No, but I think if the Yankees wanted to part with Severino, if they wanted to trade Severino, they could have gotten any of those guys.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's right. And they would have been a rental, except for Hamels. I think Hamels is locked up for another 2 years. Three more years. Okay, so, that's the guy I think that we would have looked at just because of the contract. I think Price was a rental. And so, you know, look, I'm happy with it. I think he's been good. And, it's someone who we control. And he's one of our guys now. So, you know, I like it. I like it a lot.
I agree. And I'm happy they didn't give him up, because I think finally, I know we've said this a bunch, but finally this team is going to hang on to their young guys. And we're going to see a wave of young guys come up and replace some of these veterans who are on their way out. And that's exactly what this team needs right now. All right, Sunday they scored 20 runs. Second time this season they've scored 20 runs. It was an early 7-0 lead, and I know we talked about Eovaldi earlier in this episode, but Eovaldi couldn't get through 5 with a big lead, or he only got through 5 with a big lead. And that's exactly why Eovaldi annoys me, because one day he'll go out and shut down Houston for 8 innings, and then the next time he goes out with a big lead against a terrible Atlanta lineup, and he can't get through the game. It's just frustrating to watch.
Okay. When you get frustrated, just go look at the 14-2 record, and that should give you a little bit of a buffer in the frustration. But we've already gone on our Eovaldi rants. So yeah, like I'll tell you this: just watching the game, he didn't have his best stuff. He couldn't locate the fastball, and the one thing I did notice about Eovaldi in this start that I like to see even though he didn't pitch that great. He showed a lot more emotion on the mound in this start than he ever has, than I've ever seen. I mean, he was visibly getting frustrated when he couldn't throw strikes and visibly getting frustrated on, you know, his performance. And this goes back to the fact that you know, like I said in the last outing when he threw 8 innings, he just expects to be better at this point. I mean, he's got more confidence. He knows his stuff is good. I think he's got more confidence because of the off-speed stuff, and he's getting a lot more swings and misses. And, you know, I like seeing the frustration, because to me that just means he has an expectation for himself. And I know he doesn't think it's like, you know, he doesn't think it's good enough to go out and pitch 5 innings. Like, that's obvious to me. He does not think it's good enough. He knows he has to get deeper in the games. And seeing that fire, that emotion, and the frustration on him, you know, makes me happy, because I know then that he's not expecting to go out there and just be okay. And I think this guy wants to be very good and wants to be great. So,
you know, what I'd like to see for the next month, I want to see Eovaldi and Pineda sort of have a little competition with themselves and sort of push each other to be better and see who can get that number 2 starter in the playoff position, because that's the 2 guys who is going to be fighting for it. I want to see those guys push each other and really make a play for that number 2 down the stretch here. And maybe, you know, they can sort of make each other better and force each other to go deeper in games and step up their game down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see competition, I guess, amongst all these guys. I mean, shoot, Severino's been pitching very well as well lately. He's going to be in the conversation when we get to get to the playoffs, and if that rotation's set. So, but yeah, I think over the past month, you've seen a big improvement in Eovaldi. I mean, he's got his ERA much down closer to. I mean, I think he started the game yesterday at 4, like flat 4, which is the lowest he's had it in a long time. And really never had that in his career. And moving over to the American League, to me, that's impressive. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But, you know, I have a lot more confidence in that he's going to go deeper into games. And I think the emotional commitment that Eovaldi has to being better is good to see.
Yep. So the Yankees banged out 21 hits, 20 runs in this game, 38 runs total in the series. They finally have some offensive momentum, and they're going to need it because they're going into Boston. Boston's actually playing pretty decent, oddly enough. I mean, they're in last place. They've been terrible all season, but I think they finally got a little bit of momentum. They just took 2 out of 3 from the Mets. So I think the Yankees can't take Boston and Tampa coming up this week too lightly, because those teams are going to be looking to play spoiler.
Well, no doubt. And they've seen what we've got. You know, we play 17, 18 times a season. We play these guys, and so that they know what we have. They've seen our pitching, and so yeah, they're going to be ready. And there's never an easy game with those two teams. So, so yeah, no doubt about it. But there are also, I will say this, there are opportunities for us. Not so much. I think Tampa's been, you know, better than expected all year, even though they're not. I think a lot of people thought they were going to be worse than they are. They're never an easy game, but Boston, just because they're Boston, and going into Fenway is never an easy task. So we'll see. But Boston's also an opportunity for us to win some games too. So let's not you know, forget that.
Absolutely. I might try and get to one of these games coming up this week. They're playing a weird 4 o'clock Wednesday game. Sort of getaway 4 p.m. game is odd. Maybe I'll try and cut work early and get to that one. I think tickets are pretty cheap, but. I think that'll be the day when we see some September call-ups. So maybe I'll see Ref Snyder again.
Yeah, he's got some success in Boston. He knows how to hit over the monster.
All right, so you teased it earlier. I think we have a couple mailbags that we want to get into.
Yeah, so these are – appreciate you guys writing in. These are all Stephen Drew related, and I think it's very it's fitting due to the game he had yesterday. So we'll let me read these ahead. This is the first one is from at Ross Lavento. Appreciate you, Ross, for writing in. And he said, I enjoy the show immensely, gentlemen. Thank you, Ross, again. I am so beyond frustrated with Stephen Drew. I watched – him botch a routine grounder in Monday's win versus Houston, and Kay was celebrating the fact that he had reached 200 for the first time since, I think they said since last year. Does Drew have compromising photos of Cashman or Girardi, or is this really a reason why he's in the lineup and why Refsnyder's in the minors? I know you guys don't like Drew either, but I'm wondering if this makes sense, if you can make some sense of this for me, or you know, back up my compromising photos theory. Thanks. This is Ross Lavento, loyal Yankees fan who lives in downtown Boston.
Yo, Ross. Yo, hit me up. Let's go grab some drinks, you know, at one of these games this week or something. Love it, Yankee fans in Boston. Definitely, we gotta stay strong together.
But so let's talk about it. I'm going to read the other one too, just so we can talk about this in general. This one's from we've heard from Brotron 88 before. And thanks, man, for
he's
for
our most loyal mailbagger.
Yeah, I think he's been definitely active. So I know this is the last thing anyone wants to talk about, Steve and Drew, right now. But credit where credit is due. I mean, we are in the midst of a Yankee franchise record setter. So here's the record that Big Steve, the Yankee legend, has set. There have been 269 non-pitchers with 500 or more plate appearances in Yankee history. Steve and Drew has the lowest batting average of them all at 184. And more concerning is the fact that he came to this team in 2004 and has never entered a game batting over 200 for us. In fact, he hasn't started or finished a game above 200 since June of 2014. So that being said, I will gladly stand behind anyone who wants to lead a march straight to Monument Park demanding that we retire that god of a baseball player's number.
I think Brotron,
perfect timing.
I think Brotron 88 was being a little sarcastic there.
Yeah, well, that stat has now ended because Stephen Drew ended the game yesterday with a 201 batting average and will start the next game that he starts with a 201 batting average.
Stephen Drew de god, 201.
that one has stopped. So I'll take it away, Andrew. What your comments on Steve and Drew, as if we haven't beaten this with like a dead horse.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. I mean, I think the Yankees are perfectly content with him batting 200, not making errors in the field, and hitting a home run per week, which is pretty much what he's done. He might finish the season with 20 home runs, which is absolutely insane that I'm saying that. But I think if you told the Yankees this year Steven Drew is going to play very solid defense and hit 20 home runs, they would be like, where do I sign? I don't care what else he does. Where do I sign? And that's what he's going to do. So as much as we all hate Steven Drew and as much as we all think, you know, he is bringing this team down, the reality is he really isn't. I'm not saying he's a good player, but he is in the lineup and he's they're going to deal with him for the rest of the season at this point.
Look, I think the frustration with Steven Drew on the part of Yankees fans is twofold. One, he hits under 200, and it's just become a running joke right now, the fact that he's hit under 200 for so long. But the other side of it is that we have a kid who everybody believes and thinks is ready and has had a little bit of success on the major league level when he was up for a minute, that he's kind of holding down, right? He's like the reason why he's not up. So I think the content for him is that, you know, we want to see our guy up there, and he's the reason why he's not up there, and he's not doing well, so it doesn't make any damn sense. But yes, he's hitting the ball out of the ballpark on a very inconsistent level, but he's got the numbers at the end of the day that you look at, you're like, I don't even know how that happens. What does he have, more home runs than he does singles? Like, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. He's an anomaly as far as the home runs.
You know who else had more home runs than he had singles one season?
Yeah, who's Andy Stankiewicz.
Barry Bonds,
okay. Well, that, I mean, just, we're
yes,
talking
I,
about...
Yes, I just compared Steven Drew to Barry Bonds.
Yeah, we're at a much higher clip, but... yeah, so he's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere, and he's been better lately, I guess. But you know, this is like one of the main reasons why this Yankees lineup struggles in big spurts. This is, I think, the reason why it happens is because we have too many guys on here that don't hit for average. When you have a guy that's hitting 190 or 180 for the entire season and finally eclipses the Mendoza line on September 1st or the end of August, that's an issue, and he's your starting second baseman. But he's not the only one. You know, we have guys that are not hitting for average. He's just kind of, you know, contributes to that. And that's why this team doesn't, you know, can't hit consistently for long periods of time, because we live and die with the long ball.
Yeah.
We don't get guys on base.
Well, whether Steven Drew is in the lineup or not, this offense is not going to produce at a playoff caliber level unless A-Rod and Teixeira come back and are healthy and performing close to what they were in the first half of the season. They need the top half of this lineup to carry them. Ellsbury, Gardner, A-Rod, Teixeira, McCann, Beltran. Those are the guys who's going to carry this lineup. It's not going to be Steven Drew. So
it starts though with those two guys that you mentioned getting on base. I mean, Gardner's had a absolutely, you know, this is what we've come to expect almost, unfortunately, with Gardner, you know, kind of ending the season in a
His second halves are so bad. He's such a first half player. It's insane.
So hopefully, you know, he got a couple hits yesterday, and, you know, hopefully that can kind of spur him on. I mean, the whole team obviously went into that series slumping, but came out of it as a team. So, you know, hopefully that helps. Ellsbury, you know, to his credit, you know, kind of came back from that hip injury, you know, whether it was a bruise or whatnot, he kind of bounced back from it and has been in the game. I'm glad he kind of just kind of mustered through it and was playing. So, you know, look, we need those two guys at the top of the order doing well. The fact that Didi is hitting at a much higher clip and much better second half of the year at the bottom of the lineup is helping turn things over. So if we can get some production from Drew, if he can, you know, 4-for-4 yesterday, ends the game at 201. So, you know, maybe things are trending up. Maybe not. Maybe we won't see him for another 3 weeks. But we will have Ref Snyder in there, you know, when the rosters expand to you know, maybe alleviate that long term slump at second baseman if it is happening. You know, we'll have Ref Snyder to go in there. So, you know, rosters expanding, we're gonna hopefully see more guys on base.
All right. So as we mentioned, 3 in Boston this week. Got to take care of business against a last place team, and you know, but hopefully this offense can continue what we saw in Atlanta and sort of ride the ship out until we get the big bats in the middle lineup back. But, you know, until then, we'll talk to you guys next week. And Ross, hit me up for some drinks in downtown Boston. Catch you guys next time.
Have faith. Let's go.
All right, later.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.